The TNT Shop has great gift ideas for your furry family member at TNTRadio.live. Speaking on the issues that impact, this is the Patrick Henningsen Show on TNT Radio.
All right, we're into the third hour of this live broadcast. Thank you so much for joining us. And a tremendous conversation with Blake Lovewell just before the break. The world of cryptocurrency, very difficult to understand for the layman, but Blake does have that talent in boiling it down and making it accessible. And I dare I say, putting a little human touch on something that seems to be completely unhuman in the digital sphere, the world of digital currencies. That's interesting. So that's going to get more important, and it's going to become a bigger part of the conversation in the coming weeks and months. And we will be chiming in with Blake periodically to keep our finger on the pulse of what's going on there. Very, very important. I know a lot of people are holding cryptocurrencies who listen to this show and other programs. So everyone's interested in this. They want to know which way the wind's blowing, where things are headed with the markets. We'll do our best to give you our assessment on that. We're going to do a radical pivot, however, into the world of politics right now, specifically U.S. politics. Now, there's a trial that was just concluded in Washington, and it's bizarre to say the least. I can't even believe that some of these things are happening. We're actually having to comment on some of these legal proceedings, but it's not any surprise to our next guest, who is an attorney and also happens to be the attorney for Roger Stone, among other things. And so he has witnessed this firsthand, this type of politicization of the Department of Justice and how this is affecting the political life and politics in general in the United States. The FBI, of course, are involved in this movement as well. It is disturbing, to say the least. And I believe we have on the line right now Tyler Nixon joining us on TNT Today's News Talk. Hello, Tyler.
Good to be with you, Patrick.
It's great to be with you, too. I'd like to talk, of course, about your experience with Roger Stone's case, which is incredible to say the least, looking back at it, what a ridiculous trial it was, especially from the government side of things. But this recent story with Stuart Rhodes is equally as interesting. And my understanding of this, and I'd like to get your view on this, I cannot find, looking through all of these proceedings, where the actual crime was committed. It seems, for the most part, this is a sort of political verdict once again. Are you seeing a deja vu here yet again on this story with Stuart Rhodes from Oath Keepers, this type of political trial? There seems to be more and more of these lined up. What are your thoughts on these recent developments?
Oh, it's certainly it's deja vu in the sense of the proceedings that are going on within the court, and the Department of Justice overzeal, I guess you could say. But what's missing and what's really just truly horrifying are the people being held without bail in the gulag there for just unbelievably extended periods of time and being treated, to almost Soviet style. Political prisoner type treatment, and that's just shocking beyond belief. And Stuart Rhodes, this entire organization. I mean, this is the most clear case of ideological and political based targeting using the justice system as a weapon. I think as we've yet seen to date. In Roger's case, I personally had to we had to go through this process of watching just the most obscure and irrelevant, really, in the big scheme of things, and really just transient type. I mean, I said, Roger, you're being persecuted, not prosecuted. Prosecuted, really, for what comes down to a few utterances in the Intelligence Committee that's been blown up, and frankly, a few heated exchanges with a longtime friend who, was very much a give and take, which was Randy Credico in Roger's case. And so he's charged with, threatening a witness, and he's charged with false statements and all this, just this insane, insanely inflated case over picayune nitpicks, but in areas that aren't even relevant. I mean, you're talking tertiary in an investigation, frankly, that is itself a complete farce and a complete put up. So you couldn't stack more injustice on top of deceit and manipulation, I think, than in Stone's case and how far they took it. And then the rigging of the actual proceedings with they shopped in the judge, basically by essentially lying to the court, saying that that Stone's search warrants were somehow related to Russian the GRU characters, who knows if they even exist, that were indicted by Mueller, knowing that there would never be anybody that would show up to respond to that or to get in any way give reality to it, and so they were able to proceed with that complete a total fabrication. Just to give credit, because they knew they could get away with it. I mean, there was absolutely no evidence of any kind that was of any substance. And in Stone's case, just the manipulations, and again, they shopped this judge in who had absolutely evident animus towards Stone, who slapped a gag order on him, which went on, dragged on even into the post-trial phase, which is unprecedented because the whole point of the gag order was to supposedly protect the jury pool, or the sanctity of the jury pool, which in this case, the fact that they're being, these proceedings are held in Washington, D.C., which is, I believe, 91% registration with Democrats. And I think even the Republican Party is only 6%. And you had something like a 92% vote against Donald Trump, or in favor of, I guess, Hillary Clinton. In 2016, I haven't looked at the breakdown. I'm sure it's similar in 2020. But you have a jurisdiction which is inhabited by, at least as residents and the jury pool, heavily, heavily, again, Democrat, but also leftist Democrats, which makes it almost impossible in any political matter and anything that's related to politics or has any sort of political tinge or ideological tinge to it, for anyone who is not of that stripe, meaning leftist Democrat, to get not only a fair trial, but to ever be exonerated, even if they are actually innocent. So that, the Justice Department, I use that term very loosely. I mean, really should be renamed, because it's certainly not the Department of Justice. I mean, if anything, it's at this point Department of Injustice, which is a very sad statement, because we rely on this organization presumably to enforce the laws and to see to civil rights. But I mean, they're doing exactly the opposite in the case of these January 6th defendants. They're serving as a star chamber almost of sorts, a Gestapo for this illegitimate president, who's been basically just always been a demagogue since throughout his career, and has always tried to play, he's chairman of the Judiciary Committee, but has clearly, as we saw with like Clarence Thomas's hearings in Bork, that he's willing to just bend the system into flout any sort of decorum or precedent or basic fairness in order to achieve whatever cheap short-term political ends that he wants to accomplish. And I think that, unfortunately, when he was elected and installed, well, when he was installed, not really elected, I don't believe that he was elected, that the Justice Department, which had been, even under Donald Trump, frankly, pursuing persecutions and investigations of anyone related to Trump or anybody that wasn't in the sort of establishment, primarily Democrat, network, whatever you want to call it, is sort of green-lighted now. It's like now they can go pedal to the metal and commit very egregious, in my view, human rights abuses even, and miscarriages of justice against thousands of people. I mean, it's just, it is just shocking that and that this is not a bigger issue, and that, frankly, I fault the Republican leadership for not beating the drum constantly about the abuses. I mean, just any American, I mean, it doesn't matter what your political stripe is. No one should be treated to this sort of gulag style detention, being held for months on end without trial, and then finally having a trial in a jurisdiction in which, if you're not of the political stripe of the dominant, heavily dominant, I mean, it's not even supermajority, it's almost saturation level, 91%. Of their partisan stripe, then you can count on just absolutely no matter what being convicted. And this is just, this is such a, I mean, these people are taking a sledgehammer to the foundations of our Constitution and of justice generally, and of fairness and a basic basic civic comedy of, good relations amongst people, in a sense that we can bridge the divide, whatever it be, ideological, and have a civil society. But, they're so ruthless and they're so ideologically zealous, I guess, or whatever it be. And I think a lot of it comes down to there have been so many misdeeds and if not crimes committed, particularly around the Russian collusion hoax with the falsification of warrants and the FISA court and so forth, that it's not even so much that they're pursuing these sort of counter or distractionary persecutions in order to inflict damage on their opponents, because the people being persecuted on January 6th, they're not large players. They're not heavy duty, big hitters, so to speak. They're not of the influence or reach of, say, a Roger Stone. But the fact that they're going after these small people and, distracting as a distraction indicates to me very much that it's not a matter, again, of harming their enemies. It's a matter of distracting away from their own being, their own, it being revealed, their own level of criminality. So you wonder often why are these people so ruthlessly going after, in other words, just breaking every rule to persecute those who are their opponents. And it's not for political advantage. It's to protect and cover up and ensure that they are not prosecuted for their own crimes. I mean, that's a much more potent motivator, frankly, than just simple political advantage or maintaining office. So, this is really what we've come down to, is we've got a criminal cabal that is in charge of law enforcement at the federal level in this country. And it's a very dire situation that has no easy out, unfortunately, at this point.
I might extend, if I will, Tyler, and thank you for that that insight. I might extend that to the second impeachment trial of Donald Trump was over some kind of, holding up a Ukrainian arms shipment, and it had to do with Ukraine. And they had flagged, I think this was in, the summer of 2019. And they said Donald Trump, the accusation was he was going after Joe Biden, who is his competition in the upcoming 2020 election. At that time, Biden wasn't even considered a front runner. And that should have been the red flag for everybody to look at the time. But the whole purpose of the second impeachment was to, it seems like, to create a giant diversion away from Joe Biden's own dealings vis-a-vis Ukraine. So is the ultimate sort of giant gaslighting operation to protect the king of that side of the political race. And I think it was somewhat effective, and it did sort of keep the conversation and the attention on President Trump rather than Joe Biden and the Biden family. And as we know, that's information is eventually going to come out in full at some point, but they managed to kind of squash that. But your point is that everything is heavily politicized. And I know you've had personal experience with the whole Russiagate, Farrago, the Mueller investigation, the probe. So that was a show trial by anybody's estimation. Roger Stone's trial was a show trial, a political show trial by anyone's estimation. I will argue that the Stone trial it was like the last lifeline for the whole Russiagate narrative. They had to nail somebody for something to keep the whole conspiracy theory alive of the Russians putting Donald Trump into the White House. And Roger Stone was the sacrificial lamb on the altar of that narrative. But the January 6th, it is the same type of thing. Another show trial to eliminate political opposition. That's clearly what it has become. So you've seen two examples of this now in succession in a very short space of time, a couple of years. And I'm with you, Tyler. I met a parent whose son is in the gulag, and he feels like he has no choice other than to run for office in order to save his own skin, to keep himself in the public light. That's where people are at. I honestly, and this was in Arizona, I spoke to the parent a couple weeks ago before the election. And I'm like, I can't believe what the state of the country, like every Republican should be up in arms and on every network shouting about this. This is just beyond the pale. So how is this allowed to happen? It's just beyond words. I really don't know how to respond to these events.
Yeah. The media is, well, media, we don't have media anymore. We have a propaganda machine that is donning illegitimately donning, I think, the legacy of when we did have what was a real press on some level who might have leaned liberal, but we're not willing to essentially just become total tools, total mouthpieces for a hardcore ideological or political or partisan sect as we see now. I mean, we've seen the total conversion of what was the quote mainstream media into just a giant propaganda machine, and not just for Democrat ideology, but just for corruption, for the cover up of corruption, and for the creation of false, misleading narratives, just to completely attempt to paint a false and create a false reality in which they operate. And very much anymore, it's not as though they even care what information gets out to the larger population, because they're stealing elections. So they clearly know that they cannot even achieve majorities anymore electorally with what they're doing. So really what it comes down to is almost they're setting up their own justifications within themselves, you know, with this calculus of, it all began with the Clintons when they oozed into Washington, and then the term spin became a reality, and then spin becomes narrative where we don't anymore have news fact-based news reported to us. We have a narrative. We have to have reality narrated to us, which is a euphemism in itself. And what they're narrating is their false, their spin, their false version of reality, and their propaganda. Now, I mean, it's just nonstop, and it's so it's vicious and aggressive in so many ways that it's toxic, and it's unbelievable the hypocrisy that comes with it, with the projection of these people who you would think they're talking about themselves when they go into these rants about the fascist Republicans, and it's so intrinsically deceitful that I'm almost shocking because of the acceleration of it. It's sort of just Donald Trump kind of triggered it all. I think he broke a lot of people's minds. And what we thought were, I guess, at least rational, intelligent people have become just completely around the bend, I guess you could say, when it comes to his. And it's just, it's bled into everything. Where anything goes with Donald Trump, they can justify anything or anything related to it. Now it's extended down to the MAGA movement. Any lies, any deceit, any false accusations, any sort of persecutions, nothing is sacred anymore. Nothing is worth preserving in terms of either precedent or the fact of potential turnabout, which I would hope we don't see, would never see, at least on the either conservative, libertarian, Republican side of things, that we would turn around and start persecuting falsely. But this is the diabolical nature of it, is that they deserve, there are people on the Democrat side who are criminals, who are outright criminals in positions of power, who are still to this day untouched, who deserve to be prosecuted, who absolutely are guilty of high crimes. I mean, and crimes that are subversive and absolutely destructive of the foundation of not just simply our system of government, a pluralistic society, but of civilization or civil society itself, where they just, they're flirting with civil war and violence as they antagonize and provoke and persecute innocent people. There's no more greater injustice. And now we see that it's reached the level of, as I said earlier, they know they can't win by majority, so they're outright denying the franchise of millions of people by just stealing elections outright. And just, I mean, it's a level of psychopathology that's disturbing, that it's reached this level of influence and power and organization. Because how do we overcome it? I mean, we can't turn around and become cheaters ourselves. We cannot fight corruption with similar corruption. And not much as they would love to drag us down to that level. They would love us to engage in this. And this is what essentially January 6th was all about. I mean, it was about, creating the circumstances in which, oh, look at these violent MAGA supporters, look at these violent and insurrectionists, while they ignore the billions in destruction, the rampaging and the absolute mayhem that they fomented and engendered and organized the previous summer around the Black Lives Matter and all that. And here's the thing is January 6th, you have to ask yourself, who benefited? Who benefited from this? And the idea that these people or any of the people who attended were foolish enough to think that if it descended into chaos or violence, that would somehow be beneficial to Donald Trump or to the MAGA movement or to the patriots generally or to our success as a movement. Nobody thought that for a second. And if you look at what was interrupted and what was halted by this, it was the introduction of objections to the certification of the 2020 presidential election in the House of Representatives and the Senate. And that was the objective that they wanted to accomplish. And I say they, the people who actually incited and fomented this this rioting that has been subsequently propagandized as insurrection. Yeah, I mean, who's ever heard of an unarmed insurrection? I hate to say it. If there really was an insurrection, if there really was, and the folks who showed up there, being armed as they are, whether they brought the arms, they were unarmed, but they certainly have enough. I guarantee you, there were tons of firearms owners there with lots of firearms who could have shown up armed and could have, frankly, accomplished not just a real insurrection, but like literally taken over. There's no question about that, but they didn't. So it's been pumped up as this because they wanted to distract from the fact that they outright stole the 2020 election and they didn't steal an election. They stole our government as a result. They stole the franchise of the American people. They have installed an illegitimate, false, frankly, criminal regime that we are now suffering under. And I mean, geez, it's like, if we're going to have the government stolen from us, maybe there could be some better. No, it isn't. Their policies are destroying the American economy, risking nuclear war or billions down the drain in Ukraine. We're approaching the bottom. I mean, I don't know how much worse it could get. And I mean, even down to, and then they've repeated the steal in this 2022 election. I mean, I was worked for Newt Gingrich in 1994. And we introduced the Contract with America, and he became Speaker, and we took back the Congress for the first time in the House for the first time in 40 years. And in 2010, obviously the Tea Party rose up, and there should have been a tidal wave. This probably would have been the biggest wave, even bigger than those two turnarounds. And yet it was a total fizzle. And you see establishment Republicans trying to portray it as, oh, it's Donald Trump's fault, and trying to make excuses on a legitimate level as though microanalyzing what voters thought, why they voted this way. When the obvious answer is no, the obvious answer is the election was outright stolen, period. I mean, they didn't address, they didn't want to even validate. In fact, you were a complete conspiracy theorist, you were a complete, or maybe even an insurrectionist or a terrorist, if you dare question all of the what have become now documented anomalies and incidences of fraud and manipulation in the 2020 election that have simply repeated themselves again. We are at a true inflection point within the Republican Party and within this movement as to whether we're going to continue to let people be in charge of this this organization, the Republican Party generally, who absolutely refuse to look at the reality of the fact that we are not dealing with political opponents anymore. We're dealing with a criminal syndicate, akin to, frankly, the CCP. I mean, this is reaching this level where they just operate openly and use every lever and instrumentality of the state as a weapon against their opponents and commit crimes with absolute impunity in their own side while they absolutely persecute those who dare even stray from the dogma of the regime or in any way challenge it. And we've got to take the gloves off. And if this doesn't happen, I mean, we are definitely going to go down the road to losing what we have left of the republic and being ruled by this permanent, perpetual, sort of technocratic crime junta is what it is. with puppets, like where the people who really run it aren't actually the politicians anymore. They're certainly not the elected officials, where you can elect a literal retard like John Fetterman, or a complete, well, not elect, but you can install dolts like Katie Hobbs, and just brazenly outright stealing governor's seats and senator's seats and this kind of thing, where these people are just puppets. They're just rubber stamps for these diabolical forces that are operating behind the scenes. And, you know, very much like, frankly, it isn't just limited. I said the Clintons. I mean, I think Barack Obama has a huge hand in this. He even alluded to it when he said he would love to not have to actually be the front man, to sort of be in the basement of the White House and to control a puppet of sorts. And I think that's exactly what's going on. But there are then, of course, the deeper and more murky forces, some of whom will never know their names, but certainly you look at a Soros, you look at a Bill Gates and these others, and this network of well-funded, well-heeled psychopaths who control it all. So, I mean, I can't imagine a more stacked and difficult set of players and circumstances for freedom-loving people to be up against. But throughout history, tyrants have fallen, tyrannies have never been able to be sustained. We see in China this this wonderful, the little sparkles, glimmers of an uprising of people desiring, as all people do, I think, ultimately to be free and not to be under the boot of tyranny. And, you know, I think we will rise to the challenge. Our country is full of very good people, very kind and good-hearted people who don't want to become, you know, don't want to have to stoop to the level of our opponents and the people in charge right now, but they will not be subjugated, and they will do what is necessary in the end to keep this country free. And it may be ugly, but it's going to happen, because there are certainly way more of us than there are of these this small cabal, relatively, of manipulators and psychopathological megalomaniacs.
Yes, well, that and more. I mean, go into the aspects of the Arizona election, which I firsthand witnessed in the last couple of months, in the last couple of weeks, specifically the weeks after the election, which were painful. They're still counting votes, by the way. But on the January 6th thing, you're talking about how the system is stacked to such a degree that it's almost like impossible to have any expectation of due process. And not only the Department of Justice, but the FBI has become a kind of a tool, a politicized tool, a weapon against what's looks like a, you know, whatever the political opposition is perceived to be. This recent trial with the Oath Keepers militia group, they're calling it seditious conspiracy. I don't even know how to define that. It seems like a very arbitrary charge. But what's not being spoken of in the media with the regards to the FBI is the amount, there has been some coverage, but very limited. And I can't believe that Republicans are not pouncing on this. The amount of FBI informants that have penetrated all of these groups, including the Oath Keeper, their vice president is a confidential, according to reports, including the New York Times, a confidential FBI informant. Proud Boys, up to eight informants, including the head of Proud Boys, who is outed, Enrico Torino, or self-outed, but it's widely reported as an FBI informant. Not only that, every single other group, and I'm saying, and I'm sure you're aware of this, throughout history, from J. Edgar Hoover, this is what the FBI excel at, is penetrating activist groups, campaign groups, movements, associations. They're everywhere. And so they were in these organizations months before January 6th. So the ringleaders or the rabble rousers or the vanguard are often comprised on the front lines, FBI informants. That's including Antifa, as well as on the right, the left, and everywhere, the environmental groups, PETA, you name it. They have people at the highest levels of the organization. Why does this not get factored in to the conversation? Because this, to me, is a fundamental problem with these narratives. Who is actually driving the radicalism? Have you thought about this, and what are your thoughts on this in general?
Well, I've always said, until J. Edgar Hoover's name is removed from the FBI building, we will not have a truly a real non-corrupt, let's just say, law enforcement, national law enforcement organization. I mean, from the era of COINTELPRO, and then they, I think, in post 9/11, with the powers they were given, and began these, you know, you saw these phony terror plots that they would foil, supposedly, where the only people who knew what was going on or had any sense of anything were the actual FBI, either informants and, you know, infiltrators into the thing. And they've obviously taken this this type of operational paradigm, I guess, and then now they're applying it domestically. Now, we know they've always, I think the FBI, kind of the joke is always been that you look at, say, a white supremacist group or something like that. The few that I've never even seen or heard of any, like, it's kind of a joke, all these white supremacists, except I've never heard of an organization of any of neo-Nazis, that kind of thing. Yet, if you were to look at these groups, like, at least half the top leadership and the people in it are informants. So it's kind of a joke. I mean, the real militias, so to speak, that would be out there that are actually pure and untainted, nobody's ever heard of. They're beneath the radar. They don't allow anybody in. They're super tight. But even so, this is the Bolshevik level manipulation, frankly. This is like type of this sort of Stasi level type of infiltration, and but more so, again, taking on roles in these organizations and not simply just surveilling, you know, as COINTELPRO or things like that. You know, it was more surveillance. It was more trying to get eyes on things where these people are actively promoting, taking part in, and urging on crimes. The Whitmer plot, I mean, you know, that absurdity with these poor, hapless people who couldn't probably organize, you know, a phone booth meeting, are suddenly organizing a plot to kidnap the governor of Michigan. And so, and of course, you know, we see that the same psycho who is, I believe, in charge, you know, a wife beating FBI, you know, undercover so-and-so, was involved with that, was also involved. I mean, it I guarantee if you were to like draw a sort of a diagram connecting, it's, you know, who does what and who's involved in hatching these kinds of things. That you would see a lot of very close knit connections, you know, like for example, Peter Strzok, someone like him, you know, or an Andrew Weissman. I mean, it's like these people are sort of malignancies that we can't seem to rid ourselves of. And I think they have their own connections within these organizations. I think it's very tightly held. And I think what it comes down to with the main of, for example, the FBI, is that nobody wants to sacrifice their career to try to challenge this ruthless power junta, criminal power junta that's on the loose within the Justice Department and within the FBI. So unfortunately, these people are getting away with it because who's going to stop them otherwise? I mean, it comes down to, I think all that we have left really to deal with this is, first of all, I mean, the oversight hearings and so forth, but what good does it do to hear it if nothing's done about it in the end? And we, you know, you have an organization you're expecting would enforce or would take up criminal prosecutions for things that are discovered in these hearings when they are the subject of the investigation. I mean, you know, how are you going to expect the Department of Justice to prosecute its own people? Do you expect them to bring criminal prosecutions of high-level FBI agents that are you know, involved in criminal subversion, frankly, of our constitutional system, of elections, of you know, framing innocent people and creating phony plots like the January 6th. I mean, the zeal with which they went after these people and people who weren't even actually involved in it. They just, you know, going to people's houses and ransacking, searching them, who weren't even there that day. Yet these election fraud operations completely untouched. It's gonna be a tough nut to crack. I don't know what, I mean, I think there's gonna have to be, again, I think all we've left, again, besides oversight, is power of the purse in Congress. And, you know, is there the will there? Is Kevin McCarthy willing to say, you know what, we're not funding the FBI anymore until you people get your act together, or we're just gonna abolish the FBI entirely and split it up into other organizations? It is a cancer on this country, and the Department of Justice, even more so. I mean, the fact that an Andrew Weissman, for example, the most despicable criminal ever to be a federal prosecutor, who with relish would contrive completely phony, cobbled together persecutions and prosecutions of people, as he did, for example, the Enron fallout with Arthur Anderson, and as he did, frankly, at the as the real person running the Mueller investigation. Mueller was just a figurehead because they wanted a Republican. He's a Republican, as if, you know, as if he's some ideological Republican or someone who adheres or hews to any sort of allegiance to anything Republican other than just having registered as such, so they could have that little, oh, it's run by a Republican, you know, so they have ready-made talking points to rebut the corruption and partisan nature of that operation. But it was run by Andrew Weissman, and he still persists this day, sits there in his turtleneck looking like on MSNBC spouting off, you know, how they're going to take down Donald Trump on more contrived charges and more contrived offenses. And you mentioned the impeachment part two. Yeah, that was you want to talk about a low point in jurisprudence or just generally in the government in terms of due process. And you look at how they take these picayune little things and they blow it up into the old term goes, into a federal case. And you look at the massive systematic crimes that could be documented on the other side yet are completely ignored. It's shocking. I mean, it really is. And I think that the only other avenue besides I mentioned the power of the purse and also the oversight would be what you see with like Eric Schmidt, the attorney general of Missouri. I think there are state attorneys general who could potentially play a role. And thank God there are a number of Republican states attorney general who are doing this. As we see, frankly, with the prosecution of the deposition, the deposing of Fauci, of all these people in connection with the federal mandates or the mandates generally for the vaccines and the lockdowns and all this. This is where we have to be. We have to work with what we have, but it's tough. And I think a lot of people on the election side have to realize you can't just sit home and hope that somebody else is handling it. People really have to get engaged, or it's just, this is only going to, it gets embedded and deeper each cycle that we let it go on, and it's going to get worse. So, Joe Biden, no. I grew up with Joe Biden in church every Sunday, went to school with his sons. I knew Hunter since we were teenagers, and I just never imagined that. I mean, I abhorred the thought that this man would ever be president. And I hate to say it, it's even worse than I imagined now that it's become a reality.
Oh, it's a cauldron of absolute corruption and graft. And I think a lot of people are beginning to see exactly the scale and scope of it. But I'm here with Tyler Nixon, attorney, and also represented Roger Stone, among other really important cases and activities in Washington. We are talking about the politicization of the justice system in the United States and what that actually means to the country, to society. We're going to take a brief break here with TNT Today's News Talk, and we will be right back to resume this conversation on the other side.
De-weaponizing weather with reality and perspective.
The phony climate war is going to be causing actual misery. It's already started to cause misery, of course. Just take a look at your pocketbook. I'm not just talking in the United States. I'm talking everywhere. But now that winter is coming, the same early winter that we've been talking about for over 3 months, so when the climate alarmists and phony climate warriors start blaming climate change for it, they say, well, wait a minute. What did that Neanderthal know-nothing, the climate-denying guy, Joe Bastardi, how did he know this a few months ago? Isn't that special? But here is the problem, folks. The problem is you are not going to win this phony climate war with this tit-for-tat stuff. In 2 or 3 weeks, this is going to probably be big news across the globe. And of course, they'll say one thing and we'll say another thing. The way to do it is to get way out in front of it and set the trap for them so when it comes, you could say, you didn't know it, you weren't paying attention. This is meteorologist and TNT climate and weather watchdog, Joe Bastardi, asking you to enjoy the weather. It's the only weather you got.
The possibility of lung cancer can be pretty scary, especially if you're one of approximately 8 million current or former smokers at high risk. That's why SaveByTheScan.org wants you to know that now there's a breakthrough low-dose CT scan that can detect lung cancer early, and it only takes 60 seconds. you stop smoking, now start screening. For an easy quiz to see if you're eligible, visit SaveByTheScan.org. It could save your life. SaveByTheScan.org is brought to you by the American Lung Association's Lung Force Initiative and the Ad Council.
Patrick Henningsen talks on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, welcome back. We're into the final segment of the final hour of this live broadcast here on TNT, today's News Talk. I'm your host, Patrick Henningsen. We're joined by attorney at law, Tyler Nixon. We're talking about the politicization of the justice system in the United States. And Tyler, before the break, we were talking a little bit about the FBI and their sort of role, what they see as their role to direct political affairs and events in the United States, much beyond any intelligence gathering domestically. That's questionable in itself as a practice, but nonetheless, it's taken on a greater role in sort of directing events. I don't know if you're familiar with the work of Trevor Aronson, a great journalist who wrote a book called The Terror Factory that chronicled, and we're talking about all this political stuff with January 6th, the whole Russiagate farrago. But, and this is something I'm going to speak to the right, to the Republicans, to people who watch Fox News, some high profile Al-Qaeda so-called terrorist incidents or terror busts by the FBI, according to Trevor Aronson and many other journalists who've documented this. These were FBI driven terror cells, including the 1993 bombing of the World Trade Center, which you never hear mentioned on any network, CNN, Fox, or any of them. So from the conservative side, it's almost like, I'm trying to figure out why people don't want to raise this issue of the FBI going a little bit too far in their remit on all of these things, because it's almost like they want to preserve the power of the state. Both the right and the left have some interest at the establishment level to preserve this power of the state, of the justice system. And the Garland, Texas, the terror attack in Garland, Texas, shooter or so terrorist that ended up getting shot when they showed up, handled by an FBI informant in the months previous. FBI supervisor, according to some people's reports, later in court filings, was present on the scene. The Ohio wrestler, when the FBI grandstands makes a terror bust, this was in 2015, another 2015 one, particularly active during this year for some reason. This Muslim convert, Ohio wrestler, they busted him. Turns out he got the money, he got the bombs or the material from the FBI. They busted him before he went to Washington. And so there's so many examples of this, Tyler. And what I'm saying is you can transfer this problem from that area to what we have now is a J6. I see it as part one problem, and that's that there's a massive amount of manipulation going on. The media are absolutely involved in this because they feed off of all these high profile outrage events as well. I think people in the government are somewhat benefiting from this too. People get budgets for anti-radicalization, or in the J6, the DHS and all these people, the budgets are domestic extremism. And then you have these kind of fabricated Al-Qaeda cells that are a result of the FBI themselves. So I just see a bigger trend here, Tyler, that to me is really disturbing. I don't care where it exists. It's a huge problem. And people need to speak up about this at some point, because it can destroy the political life in the country. And I think we're witnessing that now. What are your final thoughts? We got a few minutes left before we wrap it up.
Sure. No question. And I think there was an ideological sort of fork in the road when Ron Paul entered and became a player in the Republican Party. And I think that the question was, is Donald Trump going to be a Bush style neocon militarist interventionist, authoritarian? Or is he going to tend more towards a populist, libertarian, maybe true conservative type? And I think how he's been treated, even though he's certainly no purist on the level of Ron Paul, how he's been treated and what he's been subjected to and those who follow him tells you all you need to know about that, which is that he is definitely a danger in their minds, at least. He's at minimum a wild card, if not an opponent or someone who would ultimately take down this criminal cabal that has infested and infected our national government and our national political life with now. You look at 9/11, the FBI was complicit in frankly ignoring and disregarding what were obvious red flags concerning the alleged 19 hijackers here in the country. I mean, local offices were sending up all sorts of red flags, and they were purposely and intentionally disregarded. And then you had Robert Mueller installed. I mean, a week before, literally 1 week before, to the day before 9/11 occurred. So that was, you know, that was the beginning of, frankly, this push to convert our national law enforcement complex, if you want to call it that, into this domestic and just as much as international surveillance, and I hate to say it, political enforcement tool, which has only accelerated and gotten worse as the years have progressed, and you've seen the demise of that whole generation that actually took down the mafia in the 1970s and 80s. That was the post-Hoover, pre-Mueller, sort of pre 9/11, pre-Patriot Act FBI that was had somewhat good people in it. And that's now gone, thoroughly swept away, and it's all completely politicized. And, you know, it's funny because the Patriot Act, you know, many of us said it will not be long before these powers, these extraordinary powers, are turned inwardly. And I think many of us who said that at the time and opposed it were shocked at how quickly it was done. I thought it'd be a generation or two, but it didn't take until Obama, frankly, before they were using the Patriot Act type powers against political opponents, whether it be the Tea Party or leading up to Donald Trump, the FISA warrant abuses and all that. And it's really, I think it's been a shock to people on the right. I think there are the folks who were sort of going along with, or at least saying, oh, the FBI took down terror plots. And, you know, the people on the right who were opposed to, Islamic fundamentalism, this kind of thing. I think a lot of people were duped. And I think it was a lot of foofra that was ginned up by the media to make it look like there was this fervor. But I think people on the right are smart enough to know when they see an ostensible danger that goes beyond simply, in other words, they're not going to sacrifice their principles just because the plot involves some hated group. And I think they're, you know, this was a neocon sort of trait, characteristic, you know, that we've got to hate these people. We've got to justify going to war and sending our troops overseas and intervening because they hate our freedoms. They hate our way of life, which is complete nonsense. I mean, that the whole thing was a put up. And I think, look, I think the ultimately comes down to what I call the Lincoln principle, which is that they're not going to get away with fooling all the people all the time. And that's, you know, for those who haven't heard it, Abraham Lincoln said, you can fool some of the people all the time. You can fool all the people some of the time, but you cannot fool all of the people all the time. And I think what we have is an overweening, overzealous criminal cabal of arrogant psychopaths who think that they can get away with this endlessly and perpetually, but they don't realize that as they have over the years, when we have faced leftist and I don't even call them liberal anymore, frankly, fascist level manipulation in the media and mischaracterization of our side, and we're held to higher standards, they're held to no standards, it has only sharpened our game because we've had to be on our toes. We've had to live up to this false standard that they've set up where we're supposed to be altar boys while they can run around as demons. And look, I mean, ultimately, I think they sharpen our game, but we're always a few steps behind. But we will catch up because they will not get away with this perpetually because it's a den of thieves and there's no honor among thieves. And the only thing holding them together are their most base instincts and impulses, you know, greed, megalomania, and just vanity and corruption, deceit, what have you. But I believe we have righteousness on our side, and it's just a matter of figuring out, first of all, getting rid of the quislings in our midst, the rhinos who are at best sort of faithless allies, and then ultimately finding our best leaders and finding our outlets. And TNT Radio is one of these new, emerging organizations that is a product of the fact that the so-called mainstream or legacy media is so corrupt and such just now a propaganda machine. But we have to be patient about it, and we have to not be reduced to their level of corruption and really awful behavior. I mean, it's inhumane to take innocent people. Look, it's one thing if it's kind of like the old mafia honor code. Look, they wouldn't they wouldn't go after people who weren't involved in the game, so to speak. You know, they wouldn't go out and just murder innocent people they call civilians. You know, they would, if you were dealing with the mafia, if you were mixed up with them or you were part of them, then you were fair game. But I mean, we've reached a level where this criminal junta now is, it's worse than the mafia, because they don't care. They don't care about anybody who's in there. Anybody who's in their path will get run over and treated to this, treated to every aspect of the weaponization of our law enforcement and the judicial process. And so, and unfortunately, I think we can never account for, frankly, the suppression and the self-censorship and the lost opportunities. That's the only thing I sort of am fearful of. But I think ultimately people are waking up, and you know, the American public is slow to wake as a sleeping giant. But I think once there's you know, an organizing sort of catalyzing critical mass, that look out, because there will be nothing that will stop people ultimately from taking back their government in this country. And whether it doesn't have to be the entire population, but it will be a committed few, and it won't be people foolish enough to be like Stuart Rhodes, who think that they can run these organizations without infiltration and without being abused or manipulated. I think that was, you know, there were a lot of tactical mistakes made around Trump's presidency, and he made a lot of mistakes, but you know, these are, we have to learn from these and we have to move forward. But ultimately, again, we're dealing with people who are corrupt and have no allegiance to anything but their own interests. So they have no principles, which makes them weak in a sense, I think, even as ruthless as they are.
Yeah, no, I agree with that wholeheartedly, all of that. And just the last thing I'll say is I had the pleasure of interviewing a intellectual dissident from the Soviet Union who fled to America in the 80s. And, you know, we haven't published the interview yet, but we will soon. But I asked him, said, what was one of the, you know, what do you see today? I asked, what do you see today in America that reminds you or that you experienced in the Soviet Union? He said, the first thing he said, and this is interesting, Tyler, he said, is the intellectual dishonesty that that crept in and became the kind of the normal affair. And he said it was embracing lies, where people would embrace lies publicly, but privately they would complain or they would say, I don't believe in it. It's politicized. No one believes the party. But publicly they had to virtue signal in order to not be persecuted, or in order to keep their job or their position or their rights or their travel privileges or whatever. And so, and the mischaracterization of people, events, politics, internationally, domestically, all of that was normal during the Soviet period. And this is one of the causes of the collapse of the Soviet Union. It wasn't just economics. It was that people lost faith in the political mission of the, what the country promised. And he said, I'm seeing the same things happening now. It's clear in America. This is the same, he said. It's different time, different place. But basically, he said it's the same process. So I was, yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, it's funny because you say that, because I've used the term that the left, these forces, they're an ideological Potemkin village, meaning everything they say frontally or facially is completely false, that it's just a front. And it's interesting that that term Potemkin village is, you know, sort of a Soviet era creation, because it so applies today to, I think, their entire, if you can't even call it a movement, it's like I said, it's a criminal junta. So I'd be curious to hear that interview. I'd love to know, let us know when you're going to publish it.
We will soon, and I will definitely share that with you. And it's going to be very, very interesting listening for anybody. So, but yeah, an intellectual Potemkin village. I like that. Maybe we can put that out in the ether, Tyler, and get people to use that one, because I think that's pretty effective. Yeah, thank you for that. And also thank you for your time this afternoon on TNT. And it's a very important conversation. Hopefully let's keep this conversation going, Tyler. It's very, very important people talk about this now going forward.
Well, it's an honor to have joined you, Patrick, and keep up the great work. I hope to be with you again sometime.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. That's Tyler Nixon, attorney. And also, we want to keep people focused on what's going on right now, especially through the holiday season. There's going to be some big upheavals and changes happening in the next 6 months or so as America gears up for the next presidential election. It won't be long now, folks, and the issues will certainly be coming to the surface, and we will be here to cover them. And thank you to Blake Lovewell in the second hour for his journey through the world of cryptocurrency, and also Miles of Truth in the first hour. Not a lot of stories and stones are going to be left unturned in the coming weeks. We will unturn those stones and expose these stories here on TNT Today's News Talk. I'm Patrick Henningsen. Stick around. Brian McLean, Hesher, on the other side.